What did I say the other day about Limp Bizkit and something about Fred Durst praising him?
You just said that they're really good and Fred Durst is an awesome, amazing, talented, beautiful human being.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Welcome to Bad Bandmates with Nate and Josh. And we couldn't be more excited about this episode in particular. And maybe the next 3 weeks. I don't know. I mean, maybe. We're talking about maybe the best run of a particular band's career spanning over 3 albums. And we're starting at the beginning.
Yeah,
we're doing a deep dive on.
Ooh, I can't wait. Say
on
it.
the one, the only, Limp Bizkit.
Yeah.
and we're starting with $3 bill, y'all.
Yeah.
With a dollar sign after y'all, $3 bill, y'all. So is it y'all's or is it y'all cash?
I think I don't know.
Anyway, Fred Durst. Come on our podcast and confirm, please. So
he'll hear this. He'll definitely hear this.
Definitely take the time out of his day to listen to us.
He can't be busy.
Yeah, they're touring again. So, I mean,
not anywhere near where I am.
No. I had the opportunity to see them, but then it was just too short notice for work. And honestly, will I regret it till the day that I die?
Yes, 100%. Yeah.
So, Limp Bizkit, I mean, if you've listened to us for any amount of time, you'll know that Limp Bizkit's Woodstock 99 set shaped us as human beings, I think. and we're like 30. But, like, just now, we're being shaped.
I didn't become the boy that I am until Woodstock 99.
That's right. And so Limp Bizkit, I mean, look, they're rude, they're crass, they're brash, they're in your face, and that's okay. And this is where it all started. At least I think. This is the first like album that's out there, right? So
I believe so, yes.
$3 bill, y'all. Do we get into it or do you have anything to say before we start talking about this glorious album?
I think that we just go right into it. I don't know. I don't think there's a whole lot of praise that I haven't already given to Limp Bizkit that I can do again.
Right.
Y'all know how much I like them. You know what I want to say though?
Yeah.
Maybe this isn't true, but I was thinking about this when we were discussing this podcast episode idea plus possibly the next 2 or 3. And I like to think that maybe I enlightened you somehow on Limp Bizkit, because I think you definitely made fun of me in the beginning. Yeah,
definitely. It's the same thing that happened with Wizard of the Hood. Like at the time I was just like, this fucking sucks. I hate this. And then I talked about it more and then I listened to it more. And now, do I have it on vinyl? Yes, I do. I do. Do I spin it regularly? Yes.
Yeah, of course.
Every night? Yes. So, at least Omies to Smoke With. I honestly, that's a modern masterpiece. It's basically Bohemian Rhapsody, but like for Insane Clown Posse. So, anyways, we're not talking about ICP. Yes, no. I will say you showed me that there is magic, there is whimsy, there is beauty to Limp Bizkit. Now, are some of the lyrics somewhat problematic by today's standards?
Usually.
Yes. Usually. are they still saying all those things right now today when they do those songs live? Yes.
Of course.
Because they're Limp Bizkit and they don't give a heck. You know? Mm-hmm. So, what do you say we start this off? Did we do the usual song by song, track by track?
You bet. You bet.
Any opening statements?
No opening statements. I'm ready to just sick 'em.
Perfect. So we hit the intro, which is just kind of whatever. It's just some guy talking about Jesus or something like that. Yeah, you need to be saved.
Is it just a sermon with creepy noises?
I have no idea. It sounds honestly like somebody who's on the street, yeah, you know, being like, "You need to be clean, saved, get rid of the ass." You know, so like
what's the movie where there's a blind man, and there's more to that story. There's a blind man, and there's what's the in the Bible like the end of the world thing called?
Revelations.
Is that what it's called? Sure.
Like the Book of Revelations, where everything goes crazy, or
yeah.
Oh, like the Rapture.
The Rapture. Yes. Yeah. I actually, you know what? The movie's just called The Rapture. I think I don't remember, but anyway, there's a blind man. No, it's fucking Lil Nicky.
Dude,
you know what I'm talking about?
I was not laughing that it was Lil Nicky. I was laughing at the fact that you were like going down this serious path about a blind man, and you're like, yeah, you know, it is called The Rapture. I remember that. Oh wait, no, Adam Sandler did it, and it's called Lil Nicky.
That's how my brain works when I do anything. This is just how I am.
I get
you. But anyway. It does. It sounds like a man on the street just yelling about the devil. The devil's right. Coming.
The devil is coming. So then it goes into pollution. What do you think about this track?
You know, I noticed on this album that something I never really paid attention to, but Limp Bizkit has a formula.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I never noticed how often they use that formula.
Yeah, it is really. I was gonna eventually say something similar. There's very much like a big burst of energy in with like a verse that's mostly drum and bass with like Wes just doing little plunkies,
yep.
And then they bring up the energy for the chorus again, and then they do something random for a bridge. Like, mm-hmm. They'll even go into maybe a different time signature or a different, like, I mean, we'll talk about it later, but there's, like, a jazz bit in one of the mm-hmm. songs.
Yep.
And then they'll bring it back, you know, into, like, the chorus, probably.
And the chorus, the last chorus is usually gets way louder, and he yells way more.
Absolutely. And this is no exception, this track.
Nope. And I love it because it's so familiar. And it's like right off the bat, I feel like I can visualize Fred Durst on a stage. Oh, yeah. I've never seen them, but I feel like I've seen them. And I love it when he's there's this cool little organ. I want to make mention of that because musically, I think that this album is actually pretty good, aside from all the stupid stuff that we'll bring up. But they have this cool little creepy ass organ that I never noticed that they had in any of their music. But I love this song because I don't know what it's about. The title's Pollution. But then somewhere in the song, he's just going, Fred, shut up, all right? And then I believe he yells, Fred, shut the fuck up. And then they go back into the chorus. The song's great.
I love this track. I mean, the riff that's happening in the beginning is just I like all the filters that they got on it. And then they bring everything in, high energy to kick off the album. The riff is just such a, in my opinion, like just an earworm. It just gets stuck in my head, just the
And it's akin to the modern day the riff anyway, to the modern day whatever kind of music that you have me listen to. Not metal, but the almost metal.
Yeah, just like the hardcore stuff or like
hardcore, that's the word that I couldn't think of.
Yeah. Where it's just like Riff City, you know? Mm-hmm. And just heavy and loud. Yeah, and honestly, so we will do, I mean, in my opinion, the Holy Trinity, that is $3 Bill, y'all, Significant Other and Chocolate Starfish, Hot Dog Flavor Water. I mean, we're going to do those, you know.
Yeah, whether you want to hear it or not, it's happening.
And I got to say, like, you can tell this is a first outing Not that it means that it's bad. I'm just saying, like, the production style is a little bit more raw. Even going from this to Significant Other is, like, the polish is, like, way more there. This has a little bit more grit. It has a lot more screaming on this album, which, I mean, I'm a fan of. Like, I like when Fred goes crazy screaming.
Yeah, that's great.
Versus, like, you know, something like, I think, just the mellower stuff that sometimes he sings over or whatever. But
And the you get hints of polish on this album, but I feel like they purposefully left it raw because they definitely have the quality in portions of it. But I'm not sure that they, you know what, I'm wondering, I should have looked this up. Or no, this was on Interscope. Yeah, I did not expect that, actually. I was going to say maybe they switched labels because they got a little more hip-hoppy on Significant Other.
Yeah, I think they did. They were on Flip or whatever, something random like that. It's like one small short word. Whatever. Doesn't matter. We'll talk about that later.
Yes, we will.
I just like how positive Fred is about his band because he talks in the lyrics. He's like, he's always just like hyping them up. He's like, John, bring that beat back. Or like, or like,
Jay, can I get a little bit?
If they turn down Sam's bass, I'm going to tell him to turn it up or something. Like, it's just like, so like,
it's like he's in the vocal booth asking for what he needs, but he does it in the, can I get a little more of my headphones?
Like, right, you know, right, exactly.
Only Fred Durst would have that in his music.
Absolutely. And he does it quite a bit, actually. We'll talk about that whenever we do Significant Other. But because this is all I've been listening to, the first three Limp Bizkit albums for like the past, I don't know, month? Let's just say month. Anyways, the song kind of ends like really annoying, but I think that's the point because the whole thing is about like people saying that they're just noise pollution sort of thing. It is what I interpreted.
Okay.
It's what I interpreted. And like he's just going like back, 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 back for like a minute. And then like I think it's Fred telling Fred to be like, shut up. Like you said earlier, like shut the fuck up. But I think that's the point. Cause it's like the whole thing is about them being like loud and people being like, no, it's too loud. Turn down, whatever. But anyways, this song kicks it off. I see big jeans and I see bucket hats and I see
Kangol.
I see, and I see, just Fred Durst. I mean,
Fred Durst and his fucking soul patch looking thing.
So
love that guy.
And then we move on to Counterfeit. Might be top Limp Bizkit song for me, period.
Top five. Top five for show.
It's so good. Definitely. I like this track, the way that it starts, just like very, very mellow, just kind of got like the bass just going just really low, kind of plunking with Wes just being like, you know, doing his thing, his weird guitar,
his Wes Borland stuff.
Wes Borland style.
He is a one of a kind guitar player.
I completely agree.
He is such an interesting style.
But Counterfeit, and then they bring in the beat, and my God, like this, the riff that like comes in when the full band kicks in with the, I don't know if it's like harmonics. Is that what it's called on the guitar when it's like the, like the weird little, dude, this song, I play it every morning. I just wake up immediately 6:30, stroll into my child's bedroom.
And play Counterfeit by Limp Bizkit.
And I just turn it aloud. And I just scream, you're a counterfeit. Yeah. while I'm getting my child dressed for the day. Yeah. That's what I do. So, honestly, this song just rips. It absolutely rips. And it's just about, you know, someone being fake. You know, yeah. Music video is weird as fuck, just by the way.
The what?
The music video is weird as fuck, by the way.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
Well, it's like Wes Borland in a corset because, of course,
that makes sense.
But he has long hair. The whole time his eyes are rolled back in his head, of course. Which, if you've never seen Limp Bizkit, it's just so strange. You got four, actually, because there's a DJ Lethal? What's his name?
Isn't there five people?
Yeah, no, I'm saying, like, there's four normals. And then there's just Wes.
And then there's Wes Borland.
He's just head to toe in, like, monster makeup.
Yeah, he's he always wears contacts that make his eyes look all fucked up, like Alien or whatever he's feeling that day. He's a character, and it's fantastic.
An absolute character. But anyways, I've spoken enough about this song. Go ahead, Josh. What do you think?
A couple little bits that I like. Well, really, there's only a couple. I think that this song is like the perfect nu metal or example of nu metal. It's perfect.
Absolutely.
But I also never noticed, again, and this is the second song in a row now, that they have such a cool organ that gives it like a almost like a Manson Family vibe on the verse. Just creepy and like eerie sounding. It just reminds me of the Manson Family. I don't know why. But I love it. This song is fantastic. I think that you covered everything. It's a great song. Everyone's going to like this song.
Yeah. This song just absolutely rips. I mean, it's just so good. And the bass line in the verse, hey, give me that all day.
It's so good. It's so wild and all over the place, but yet everything's very purposeful.
Yeah, it's so strange. But anyways, that's Counterfeit for me. So what do you got next here? We got Stuck.
Stuck. Let's see here. Oh, like when he goes, you want to play that game, bitch?
Oh, yeah. Another wonky, just a weird bass line that opens everything up. Like,
it kind of carries on the whole album. I think his bass lines, they always sound like they're not on the same page as the rest of the band.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me a little bit of like Primus, where like, not in the way that he plays bass or anything, but as a whole Primus, between Les Claypool and the guitar player, which I can't remember his name off the top of my head, in Primus, it seems like they're on two totally different planets, but then everything just kind of comes together in some way, somehow. And it's always weird and wonky, but it's like it fits, you know? So,
yeah. But yeah, I would agree with that. I wanted to make mention of the drum sounds on this album.
Yeah.
I hate them, but I love them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that like, very, how do you describe the snare in particular? That like
tight,
just kind of
just tight.
Yeah.
Super tight.
Yeah, just.
Yeah.
Just it's, twang. Like,
yeah,
just
it's not, they're not, they don't sound good, but yet they also sound really, really good.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Which I feel like is Limp Bizkit as a whole, now that I'm thinking about it.
I like the drum sound. I know that you don't really like that kind of, I don't know, that especially that snare. I feel like you probably do not like.
I'm not a fan of the snare. No, I like big thick snares, and this is everything but that.
Yeah, the total opposite, right? I love the drum sound on this. I mean. It was perfect for like that time and perfect for what they're trying to do, because they're infusing this hip hop and rock, and it was just like this, you know, weird thing. And it's like, well, let's just make it sound decent and fat with a pH. Yeah.
With a pH. This is the first song, like if you're new to Limp Bizkit, this is the first experience you get with their more hip hop side, which I like. a little more the rhymey rhymer Fred.
The rhymey the rhymer Fred.
The rim rhymes. He also says bitch a lot in this song. I think he even says biatch. Or biatch maybe at a point. Yeah, he says, I got a little problem. Just one question, biatch. I love it. You know bitch is my favorite swear word.
It's a great swear word. I mean, it is.
It's a perfect swear word.
Let me see. Yeah, there's actually like a classic in the second verse, a classic, like, I guess you'd call it homage to the band Suicidal Tendencies. You know that song, the like really annoying Suicidal Tendencies song where it's just like, all I wanted was a Pepsi, just one Pepsi. Mom, give me a Pepsi. That song sucks ass, but like people love it for some reason. I think they just think it's different, and that's why I love it. But a little nice little hip hop verse revolving around that Suicidal Tendencies song.
I didn't catch that. I caught the line, but I didn't know what it was from.
Yeah, because he says something like, all I wanted was a Pepsi, just one Pepsi, not suicidal, but I got the tendency, or something like that. It's something like that. And then this is the song that has the jazz break just in the middle of it for some reason.
Yeah, it's at like two minutes, 50 seconds. Just switches to a jazz song.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, it's really good, though.
It is. it's kind of strange, but it works somehow. But that's all I got for this one. It's a good song. It's just loud in your face. He says bitch a lot.
Yeah.
There's a jazz break. And there's a break.
Jazz bit. Yeah, that's all.
I mean, what more do you need, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's it. During the jazz bit is when he says, I got a little problem, just one question, biatch.
Biatch, yeah, perfect. let's move on to Nobody Loves Me.
What do you got?
Well, first of all, shut up! Just like, right away.
Yeah.
Just, I honestly just pictured you just saying that.
I appreciate that, I guess.
I don't know. I can't explain it. It's just, you know, it was just something you would do.
Sure. Sure.
Like to me at your house, you would just tell me to shut up.
Yeah. I'm abusive. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
You heard it here first.
Fat bass in the verse. Mm-hmm. Just slapping away, dude. Yeah. Sam, I think, is the bass player.
Sam, yeah. He is a great bass player. He's really excellent. Good.
Excellent bass player.
Weird dude. That's the, if you guys listen to the 99 Woodstock, that's the dude with the middle finger.
Yeah.
If you remember that story. If not, go listen to the episode or watch Woodstock 99. Either right. One.
Honestly, we've both watched it countless times. So.
The day the music died.
Yeah. Yeah. There's this weird bit in this track, but I like it. But I can't. I'm terrible at describing some of these things. But it's like this. I think it's like a bridge part, probably. Like Wes is doing like on the guitar is doing this like, digga, 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 but like then he kind of like lets it go a little bit, and then it sounds like the strings are just almost like barely hanging on to the guitar, and it has this weird like twangy sound that he does a lot, and I liked that. I just liked that bit.
Yeah, he's just doing like a little palm muted to open business.
Yeah.
And bending the fuck out of those strings. Which is a little bit of the Wes Borland style. I mean, it's nothing incredibly complicated.
Right.
But I can't play it. I'm talking about for people that can play instruments. But it's super effective. And then you add in Fred Durst like whispering and getting a little more intense with every word. It's a good bridge. This is another example of the Limp Bizkit formula.
Yes. Then we get into Sour, which is another Mellow track. Out. Yeah, exactly. Shut up. Mellow out. Just like, all right.
Only
didn't
Fred
know how
Durst.
To start the song, so.
I thought the intro of this was really cool.
Yeah.
With the, I don't know what the instrument is, like the percussive instrument, but it sounds like a hand drum.
Yeah, yeah, it's like some sort of like bongo or congo and or conga. Yeah, I mean it's something.
Yeah, it's a different intro than they've used so far, which I think is necessary, just to keep the album from getting, you know, new metal boring.
Yeah, and the guitar riff is just that like starts everything out is like. It's almost like he just like grabbed his guitar, put both hands on the neck, and just was like, let me just like doodle with my fingers here for like a little bit. And then he was like, oh, okay, I guess, yeah, that sounds cool. Record that. Like it's it sounds almost completely random, but like,
yeah, like very accidental.
Yeah. I think the song is about fake females, of course, you know.
Of course it is. He says bitch again a lot, too. He says, I sound like a bitch, a little bitch in heat. And then he says, with all that anger that I'm feeling, bitch, I think it's heat. It's not great lyrical content on this song.
No.
This song's not well written.
And we get a roll credits moment, which is the moment in TV or film when they say what the name of the film or TV show is, you know?
Yep.
He says, you're about as real as a $3
bill.
$3 bill.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a great line. And it's also really fun to hear the name of the album within the song.
Yeah, it's like that Leonardo DiCaprio meme from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood where he's like sitting up in his chair and he's like, doing that.
Yep.
It's like, hey, I know this. Yeah, that's the name of the album.
But yeah, this song was okay. I thought it was boring. It was a little boring.
A little boring. We move on to Stalemate.
Guitar riff on this song in the beginning.
Yeah.
Woo!
Great.
Woo! So really cool. Many hammer-ons and pull-offs and things I don't know how to play.
And then building on top of that is John, I believe, is the drummer. John on drums just kind of killing it, just going a little ham for like a good minute or so. But yeah, that guitar riff is nice. And the drums building on top of it. And then they bring the beat in, and then Wes is doing the warbly bendy guitar thing that I was kind of talking about earlier, but yep. And then they kind of like bump up the beats per minute like midway through.
I was trying to figure out if there was a tempo change.
It's like
there was, but I can't tell if it's maybe they just weren't like maybe they were playing behind the click in the beginning and then actually went on time. I can't tell.
I think it was a bump up in the BPMs.
Beats
and then,
per minute.
Yeah. Because the cool thing is I think like they do that a little like once or twice where they kind of bump everything up. They bump up the energy and then eventually it goes back to that original riff at the beginning, mm-hmm. right? Like toward the end of the song.
Yep.
And I like the way that they did that because it just I don't know. The song is a little bit long for me, but like them making it full circle like that is kind of worth it. It's at least a redemptive longer song where it's like, all right, you know, let's wrap this up. But I think it works.
It could have been half the length, though.
Sure.
And they still could have made it full circle on it. But it was a cool song. They have a lot of different musical touches that they put in it, we'll say. And this is one of the songs where their production value stands out, I think. Like,
yep.
They clearly had the ability to get what they got on Significant Other, which was obviously their big record.
Uh-huh.
And they went a little different direction on this album, which I think is fantastic. But yeah, you get a little taste of it. Just a little tit, as I say.
Yeah, yeah, you do. You do, don't you?
I do, sir.
Clunk?
Of course. Of course Fred is saying clunk, clunk, clunk on the downbeats. Of course he is. Of course. Way to take a metal riff and make it goofy.
Yeah, right.
I love it.
This song is, I would say this song is a little bit more on just the like straight up metal side.
I would agree like, with you. Yes.
That fat with the pH bass line that just like opens everything up and like
the riff then, is just metal as fuck.
Yeah. Song. It's just so good.
The only thing that's not is the drumming.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's no, like, double bassy stuff, but...
No chinas.
He does, he does do a lot of cymbal work, if you, like, watch him live. He does have a china. I've watched Woodstock 99 about 99 times, so...
That's the right amount of times.
Yeah, that's the minimum necessary. But then there is that break that like really takes it into like a full hip hop groove, right? It's like midway through, and it's not, and it's like Fred, and he's not putting on that oh what the it's like him like regular talking, but like and I'm like, yeah, do that, Fred. You don't have to put on a whoa like voice.
Well, but he does though. But I liked it on this one when he didn't.
It was a nice switch up. I'll say that. Like, I mean, Fred wouldn't be Fred without that voice, right? So, I mean, I get
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. This time I'm going to let it all go out. Anyways, that's not this album. We'll get to that one.
We'll get there.
But I did like this little hip hop part because it was like, is that Fred? Like, I had to, like, read, and I was like, oh, yeah, I guess it is Fred. He's just, you know.
He sounds normal. He definitely yeah. has, like, a persona that he plays.
A Fred-sona, right?
Yeah, he has a Fred-sona that he plays in heavily.
Agreed. Then we get to the song that is a cover, but probably put them on the map.
Yeah, it definitely did. We got Faith. Originally right. by was it George Michael. Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Great song. The original and this one.
Yeah. Get the fuck up. That wasn't in the original, but...
That was not, no. That was an ad-lib.
Just, I can't remember who, like, pointed it out, but, like, it's always stuck with me, like, whenever they're about to go into the chorus... And, like, Fred is, like, doing his singing kind of voice. But then he goes, showing you that door?
Yeah.
It's just always
show
like.
You that door?
Just really ramps up the intensity. Yeah. And then, you gotta have faith.
But can't you just picture him, like, getting into his power stance and gripping the mic with two hands and just, show you that door?
Right. And then he does his, like.
Yeah. His fucking like, headbang with his New York hat on.
His red New York hat backwards.
I love this band so much.
God damn it. Limp Bizkit's the best.
I think we talked about this in the 99 episode, but dude's got a good singing voice. Got a very good voice. And this is in his pretty raw days where the albums were pretty much just yelling, but you got some good examples of how talented he is vocally.
It's not bad. Like, it did amaze me, like, again, to touch on, like, lyrical content and, like, the rhymes and stuff like that. A lot of it's very basic. Nothing is too complex. He's not doing, like, multi-layered rhymes in two or three sentences or anything like that. It's nothing crazy, but, like, he definitely had a style. He stuck with it, and obviously it went miles for them. And I have to say that, like, watching them live at Woodstock 99 is what, like, made me be like, as much as this band is just, like, a kind of a joke nowadays, but not really, there's hardcore fans, right? as much as they're kind of a joke, it's like they really went for it and they wanted it and they really like performed and they and they were good. They were tight live. They're they're good performers.
They were energetic and you could tell that they really put it all into their performances. And also in 1997, something to think about if you're making fun of Limp Bizkit. In 97, I mean, who were they stylistically? Who were they competing with? Like, this isn't a, from my memory anyway, from what I recall, this is kind of in a realm of its own.
Yeah, I for that think era? I think you would have had by this point. Let's see, the two kind of big names that come first to my mind are Korn and Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah, and even with the, well, I guess Rage Against the Machine's pretty close, but even at that rate, I feel like they incorporated so many different elements into it that nobody else was really hitting as much as they were.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Korn had released a few joints by this point, but they were, but Korn was more like, I mean, they are nu metal, they're, but they definitely had like the crazy ass style. They were just crazy motherfuckers, like doing meth. Like, so I don't know. let's see, Rage Against the Machine. They are more closely, I would say, closely related to like Limp Bizkit, sort of.
I guess stylistically, yeah. But Rage Against the Machine, like if you're if you compare, content.
Yeah, definitely not lyrically. Yeah, no.
No.
It's kind of funny. I was just watching like somebody talking about, it was some like thing where people were talking about Limp Bizkit or something like that. And Tom Morello, is that the guitar player for Rage Against the Machine? Tom Morello, I'm pretty sure.
You want me to Google it?
Nah, I'm either right or I'm wrong. But
okay.
Tom Morello was talking about like someone was like comparing or something like that, and he's like, yeah, well, you know. What the way I see it is we were not like label friendly. We were releasing albums once every like 4 years. We weren't talking about like political and social issues and stuff like that. And I think what the labels needed was somebody like Limp Bizkit, who was all about girls, party, a little frat-ish, a little, like, you know, not substance-based. Like, it's just, they're talking about whatever, and it's usually girls, and it's usually angsty, and it's usually something like that. Mm-hmm. And I think he even said, like, I'm sorry that we did that. I don't know, that we were the seeds sown for, like, getting somebody like that. But anyways, yeah, I just think that I can't even remember where we were talking about this in the first place, but comparing everybody. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Rage was already two albums deep at this point too. But I still think that Limp Bizkit had something more, I want to say special, I guess. But
I'd say universally acceptable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If that makes sense. Because MTV was really calling for, you know, the sort of outrageous, outlandish shit that Fred Durst was willing to put lyrically into his music. And
right,
like you said, nu metal was on the rise and gaining popularity, and they definitely pushed it into a whole new,
it was, know, that mainstream category. Appeal of, like, in the same vein where, like, we're like, oh, Green Day isn't punk, you know, right, or like Blink-182 isn't punk. And then now people look back fondly on them as like the pop punk godfathers,
yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
the pioneers.
Right. And so it's like, oh, they're not. So it's like, it's total like gatekeeping mentality sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, they kind of, but they kind of like pushed it and elevated it into a mainstream appeal, we'll say.
Yeah. So. And I wanted to go back and say, when I said universally acceptable, what I should have said was universally hated, which made kids like it more. Because it's just like you know, with the stuff that the content that maybe Eminem was saying on MTV, right?
I was just gonna say that.
Yeah. It was outrageous and borderline disgusting at times, you know?
Yep.
But everyone was so against it that kids ate that shit the fuck up.
Absolutely. Yep.
And now it's just satirical because it's fucking Fred Durst.
Yeah, but it's in a way now where, like, is it satirical? No, because I've grown to just, I've accepted that it's not a meme for me. It's it's a part of my everyday life.
It's life.
Yeah. So anyways, Faith, what more can you say about that? It's just a, I mean, it's what put them on the map, which is funny because it's like a cover song, but it really opened, it really, they were shown that door and then they opened that door and then,
yeah, get the fuck up.
They got the fuck up. So, yep. Stink Finger.
Yeah, dude, what a name. What a Limp Bizkit would have a song named Stink Finger.
I said, yeah, dude, rename that song. Definitely do that. Rename it. This song is just kind of like, you know, it gets a little chaotic, I think, with how I feel like there's a lot of elements kind of crashing into each other during the chorus mostly.
Yeah, there's a lot. It's very chaotic, very cluttered.
Yes, and which, you know, whatever. It's not terrible, but like it is what it is. I do want to, of course, again mention Sam's bass playing on the verse, just that fat with a pH slap bass. Mm-hmm. And then I think there's a bit at let me get the timestamp here at 2:48 where this is one of those things that made me laugh where Fred just goes stinky finger.
Dude. Yeah, I have that written down. I didn't have my timestamp, but I have that written down in my notes. In quotes, in all caps. Stinky finger.
Yes, so exactly. Stupid. That's all I really have to say on this one. It's just a little chaotic, but I like the fat slap bass on the verses and the stinky finger.
Yeah, this is an example, I think, of a band that hasn't fully grown. Yeah, if that makes sense. Like it's a good idea. Just everything was a producer probably should have been in there to be like, hey, let's take out some of the shit in the chorus. Yes.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. I mean, it's just what I just specifically wrote down was it's just a lot of elements crashing into each other on the chorus and stuff. So then we get into Indigo Flow, which
this is a dope song.
The beat's kind of nice.
And I love the vocals. This is a very, like, early 2000s, late 1990s thing where they don't, it's not doubled, it's one single vocal, but they'll pick a couple lines, like, or a couple words on the end of a line, and then just double it. Like, it'll just be him saying it in the same tone, the exact same way, just to, like, emphasize a couple words, and I love it. Also, he sounds like he's doing a Method Man ripoff a little bit on this.
Yeah, definitely, because, I mean, clearly he thinks that, I believe, on...
We'll get there.
We'll get there, but I think he heavily is influenced specifically by Method Man of Wu-Tang.
And I love his voice in this, though. I think it's...
Yeah, definitely.
It's, for lack of a better way of saying it, it's really sexy.
Yeah, sure. I think that this track in particular, it's a little strange because the lyrics, it just seems like it's just shout outs. It's just like, thank you to this person and this person. Yeah. And then I talk to this person. And it's like, there's a lot of just shout outs in this track, which is like fine. Cause I mean, it's a good song, you know, it just is, I don't know. There's something weird about it, but
I think he says there's a line. Hold on, let me listen. Yeah, he says Sugar Ray.
Yeah.
Told me life was all about drinking.
Yeah, dude. Oh,
fucking Sugar Ray shout out. But yeah, the whole song is he's like, Chris, thanks for the bagels. Mom, thanks for giving me birth. Becky, thanks for letting me stay at your house that September 4th when I didn't have anywhere else to stay. Jim,
right.
Thanks for letting me borrow your car to go to the Walmart. It's just a weird, it's a weird song.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. And maybe there's some deeper thing to it. Who knows?
I'm sure there is.
Absolutely. Fred is that kind of genius.
He really is. And then it goes into, you know, at about 140, I want to say, he starts yelling, and it goes into the scratchy scratches with the West Borland and the typical Limp Bizkit.
Yeah, definitely.
Great track, though.
Yeah. Next, we get into Leech. I mean, this is kind of a slamming track, man. And it's pretty, like, fairly short. I mean, is it, like, actually a demo, or am I just, like, looking at...
Everything I found online, I tried to Google it, too, said it was the demo version. So I don't know if they just didn't recut it for the album and just use what they had. But, I mean, the quality holds up, so if it is a demo, good choice.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it's pretty good. Like, it's just a slamming track. The verse of this, where it's just, like, the tom and, like... I think it's like a tom and bass breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
The bass is just going ham on the verse as always. Dude, holy shit. Okay, you start at a minute 30 and like it just is broken down to just the guitar, just doing the weird mm-hmm. West Borland shit, and then it's just like these snare tom hits with the bass, like bum bum. And then there's just like, and then Fred just like, and then it's just a gun cock, and then just like, dude, that shit slams.
It's really good. Oh, and that throw up yelling that he does after the gun click, he's just for like an uncomfortable amount of time.
I couldn't ask for a better track right
here.
It's
a great song. This is a great song. And I don't even like hardcore.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's fucking Limp Bizkit.
We need that on a t-shirt. Just, I don't even like hardcore, but it's Limp Bizkit.
That'll be our first merch shirt that we make.
Hell yeah. But that's all I got to say about this. I mean, it's just high energy. It never stops. This track, and it's perfect length too. Absolutely shreds.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say about that. And then we get into Everything, which...
Why?
16 minutes, my guys.
Like, why? Why? Leave it at Leech. Why?
Leave it at Leech.
We could put that on a shirt too.
Leave it at Leech. Yeah. Let's make a Woodstock 99 t-shirt. So Everything is the last track. You don't need to listen to this one.
No, you just don't. It's 16 minutes of nothing.
I will say the bass is just nice. I don't know if you actually listen to it, but like if you do listen to the song, the bass has just got this nice continuous flow going the whole time. And also, I apologize if anyone's listening. There's just, like, elephants upstairs, it sounds like. There's just people stomping their feet up there. So, anyways, this song is just entirely too long. Doesn't need to have a 16-minute outro. Just leave it at Leech, you know?
Come on, Fred. Leave it at Leech.
Yeah, I didn't even write anything down because... Lord knows I'm not going to listen to 16 minutes of a song.
No, I made it through 8 minutes, and I was definitely doing other things.
Remember when Bob gave us the Horseman album or whatever it was? What's that album?
Horses of Humanity.
I think that was it. And it was just like, I remember I said I took a look at the track list or something, and I was just like, a 14 minute song, fuck this, like, just like, or whatever, you know. It's like, that's the way I felt like this.
Yeah, I skipped that one. I skipped this one.
Right.
I don't even care.
Limp Bizkit, $3 bill, y'all, dollar sign, cash, whatever you say at the end. This is an album that has a top tier Limp Bizkit song in Counterfeit. It's a top tier Limp Bizkit song, top five, maybe even top three. And this album is just, it's the spark, mm-hmm, that lights their career. You know what I mean?
Yep.
That's this album. If you want to see where they started, I mean, this is it. And it's very much more in your face, like we talked about in the beginning. There's a lot more screaming and yelling. You can see lights and sparks of the production of where it could be. But obviously, once Significant Other came out, it was like, that's where everything kind of clicked. And not click, click, boom, but, you know, but it all clicked.
Gotcha. That was a good reference drop there.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean? but let's keep rolling, 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 rolling. Do you have any closing thoughts on this album?
I would agree with you that this song is, or excuse me, this album has one of the best Limp Bizkit songs. And as you stated, this is the match that ignites the fire that became the Bizkit.
Absolutely. And
I love it. I love it.
The match that became the Bizkit, dude. This is the oven was preheating. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They turned it to 450 on this album. And on the next one, what is taken out is the album. I lost it.
You could have said anything at that moment. And you said what was taken out was the album. Yeah. Well, hey, that's all that came to your head. So
let's figure this out on air, because this is live. Are we doing 2 more weeks of Limp Bizkit?
Yep.
Dude, fuck it. Right? Let's see if we can't get everybody to stop listening.
Except for Fred Durst. I want him to listen.
Fred's going to be here for the next episode.
Next episode, we get Fred and Wes Borland on.
They agreed to FaceTime with bad bandmates.
Dude, and, can you fathom that? Holy shit.
I'd shit my pants and go to bed. I wouldn't even be able to talk to them.
I wouldn't. I would sit in my poop pants and just there. I would be in bed. Wes, Sam, John, DJ Lethal?
Khaled?
I think it's Lethal.
It's definitely DJ Lethal. I think.
Come on our show, dude.
Yeah.
Please. But we're doing 2 more weeks of Limp Bizkit. Fuck it.
So what's the next one? What's the next one we got?
Significant Other, baby.
Yeah. The album that really brought them into MTV fame.
Skyrocketed their career.
Yeah. Yes.
That's about it for this episode. So this has been Bad Band Buttholes. And I'm Nate, and that's Josh. Go listen to Limp Bizkit.
Correct.
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and share this with your family.
Mail us some postcards.
And mellow out.